Hi, I'm Ken Kessler, and welcome to the Sounds of Christmas podcast. If you're new to this podcast, I want to start by saying thanks for joining us. If you're not new, welcome back. Either way, I'm glad you're here. Now, to avoid any confusion, I want to start off by saying there won't be any music played here. This is a place for conversation. I'll talk about Christmas music and some related topics, sometimes by myself and sometimes with guests. If you're looking for music, just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. We play the best variety of Christmas music all year long. Well, except in October, when we play the best variety of Halloween music. Singer-songwriter Blaine Howard is with us on this episode of the Sounds of Christmas podcast. Hi, Blaine. Thanks for joining us today.
Ken, thank you so much for having me, man.
My pleasure. Blaine was named the Arkansas CMA Male Vocalist of the Year in 2018 and 2019, and he has opened for lots of big names like Blake Shelton, Trace Adkins, and Charlie Daniels, just to name a few. And I know as the opening act, you don't always get to talk to or interact with whoever the main act for that show is. Any chance you got to talk to Charlie Daniels or interact with him at all?
I did, actually. Yeah, that you're right. A lot of times you don't always get to, you know, interact with the headliner, but Charlie was one of the guys that I actually did. I opened for him at the Arkansas State Fair in Little Rock, and we came off stage, you know, we're packing our stuff up, we kind of get off, and then all of a sudden this, you know, guy kind of walks up behind us, and it's Charlie Daniels. And he, you know, walks up to us and says, you know, did you guys have fun up there? You guys looked like you were having a lot of fun or something like that. And I said, oh, yeah, we had a great time. Thank you so much for having us. Can't wait to hear you or whatever. And he kind of looked at us, kind of nodded his head and said, all right, I'm going to see if I can have some fun, too. And then went up there and just, of course, you know, sawed the crap out of the fiddle and, you know, entertained the entire crowd for hours.
That's so cool. New album is called Christmas in the Car, and we're going to get to that in just a minute. But first, I want to talk about one of your first singles, Promise to Love Her. Mm-hmm. 125 million streams across all platforms. The music video, 17 consecutive weeks on CMT Music's 12-pack countdown, including a week at number one. There's a video from 2017 that has over 2 million views. There's a new video from 2019 with over 11 million, over 18 million streams on Spotify. Wow. And this was a song that was a wedding present for your wife. And I don't mean to say that like it's in a dismissive kind of way, like this was just, you know, this was just a gift for somebody. But that's kind of what it was. It wasn't really like that you were thinking, this is my next release, this is going to be my big hit, right?
That's absolutely right. Yeah, I was even hesitant to put it out to the public because it was so personal to me. For a while, you know, I wanted to just kind of keep it something that was personal to me and my wife. But yeah, it was a wedding gift that I wrote for her. I surprised her with it on the morning of our wedding, and she loved it so much that we surprised our entire reception with it, used it as our first dance. And, you know, we're on our honeymoon, and someone got a little bit of like some grainy cell phone video and posted it to Facebook. And all of a sudden, it got like 500,000 views on Facebook. And we had someone, while I was on my honeymoon, asked like, oh my gosh, can I use this at my wedding this weekend? So that was kind of a clue to me that, man, maybe there's something to this song. And sure enough, man, it just completely took off. You know, we only pushed it to small market radio on our own. And like you said, all those streams and views and all that stuff, was most of that was all organic. And it's just one of those things that, you know, sometimes you catch lightning in a bottle.
Yeah, it's amazing. Now, Spotify makes lots of their own playlists, and they have one called Blaine Howard Radio, and it features you, and it has tracks also from Scotty McCreery, Brett Young, Rascal Flatts. I think there's a Tim McGraw song on there, but the first track on the playlist is Promise to Love Her. Very cool.
It's been really cool to see the song catch on to a lot of playlists. I think the first thing we saw, it started catching on, I think, on Pandora, so like Luke Combs Radio and a few other artists like that. And then all of a sudden it catches on to, you know, a lot bigger names and their little stations on there. And it just kind of piles up. And we like never even realized it and never even spent any promo money or anything like that, talked to anyone at Pandora. It was just all organic. And then so we reached out and like, you know, can you give us any data on this? And they're like, oh, my gosh, this is performing great. without us even touching it. So they, you know, kind of were able to fit it into a few more playlists, and Spotify did the same. And, you know, we've had a good amount of numbers on Apple Music as well. It's just, it's crazy how those songs catch on. And, you know, when you hear a song and you hit that thumbs up or that like button on Spotify or Pandora or whatever you're listening to, it can make a difference.
Yeah. And it makes me wonder if Hallmark has contacted you yet.
They have not. We've definitely reached out to a lot of people. We reached out to a lot of jewelry companies trying to do, you know, all kinds of wedding promos. You know, hey, you know, maybe we do some contest where somebody, you know, when they buy a ring, they get entered in a contest to win me sing the song at their wedding or whatever. But not yet. We are hoping that the song continues to grow and continues to find ways to find people out there.
And it's got such a great story with it. It just sounds like it could be a Hallmark movie on its own. So if you're connected to Hallmark and you're listening to this, shoot me a message and I'll connect you guys and you could talk.
Hey, absolutely.
It just seems like a Hallmark movie kind of thing. Now, about 180 degrees away from that, Arkansas Y'all and Run It Back and Take It Back, a trio of football songs. First one for the Razorbacks, the others for the Kansas City Chiefs. Hundreds of thousands of more views for those on YouTube. Run It Back is your third most streamed song on Spotify. It was a big deal for the Chiefs a couple years ago on the run-up to the playoffs. As a sports fan, that has to be that's just got to be an incredible feeling to have such a great reception for your song.
Yeah, definitely. That was 100%. It was two things, really. I started doing these fun little parody videos when the Chiefs would make their playoff runs the 2 years prior, and they won the Super Bowl in, you know, February of 2020. And so all those videos just really, really took off, gave me a lot of, not just fans of my music, but, you know, made me a lot of friends in the Kansas City area as well. And so when the next season came out and they were trying to, you know, go back and win the Super Bowl again, obviously they made it back and lost to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But I put that song out strictly because I wanted the Chiefs to have a song that was mine, not a parody. And also it was in the middle of COVID. All my touring was canceled. You know, we had a brand new EP and project that was about to come out, and that all got put on hold. And I was like, well, I got to have something going on. So I put that song out and recorded it. And like you said, it's my third most streamed song on Spotify. And it's really only tailored to one, you know, mid-sized Midwestern city in the middle of the country. So to get that many streams on it has been awesome. The Chiefs used it in a highlight reel after the first playoff win that year. They played it inside the stadium at the game. I got to go play a tailgate down in Tampa for the Super Bowl that year. And it's led to so many more performances and getting to meet players. I actually got to perform in Arrowhead Stadium for their big season ticket holders draft party this year, too. So it's led to so many great opportunities, allowed me to meet so many great people, former Chiefs players. It's just, it's been unbelievable. And when I go to Kansas City, man, I go to a game, there's always somebody in the parking lot blaring it, too. So it's just so cool.
Yeah, that's got to be really thrilling, especially for a big fan. Now, in the midst of this, you also recorded with Jason Lyle Black a couple tracks on his Disney album, Friend Like Me. How did that come about?
Honestly, yeah, it's funny. Sometimes I forget that I did those because I do so much music and I've recorded so much stuff. But Jason, you know, he went viral. I think he was on Ellen for playing the piano upside down and stuff like that. And he somehow got licensed through Disney to do some like country piano arrangements of these songs. So he, you know, he asked me to come in and sing on a few. And I think I even recommended a couple of other friends to sing on that as well. And that was a lot of fun because that's something completely different than what I normally do with country music.
If anybody's trying to pigeonhole you as a particular kind of artist, they really have their work cut out for them just based on the stuff that we have talked about. Do you ever feel like they try to put you in a box as a country artist?
I mean, that's what I describe myself as. I mean, I would describe myself as a country artist, but I have so many, you know, influences from so many different styles of music. My mom always had country stuff playing, but she also would play Frank Sinatra and Dean Martin and Tony Bennett. And then my dad, when I was in the car with my dad, it was never country. It was on the rock station. It was on the station that played Prince and Elton John and the Beatles and the Rolling Stones and all that classic rock, Van Halen and Led Zeppelin and all that stuff. So I've got a lot of different influences that kind of come through me. And then also, you know, I've spent 5 or 6 years in high school and college performing and, you know, taking classical voice lessons too. So I've got so many different styles that kind of meld all into me.
Well, and I think that being labeled a country artist 30, 40 years ago had a specific kind of connotation, but there's so many different kinds of country artists now. I know that there's subgenres within the genre, but I don't think it has that. Do you find that it doesn't really have that sort of pigeonholing like it used to?
There's a little bit still, I'd say, but yeah, I think you're right. I mean, obviously you've got the guys that are doing the Texas scene stuff that's very what we would call traditional and very very Western style. Steel guitar, fiddle is still very heavily prevalent. Oklahoma's got their red dirt. You've got the stuff that you hear like on, you know, on Yellowstone, the TV show, out in Montana, Wyoming, and Colorado and all that stuff too, that has all that Americana roots mixed in. You've got, you know, some guys go like Mumford and Sons is kind of bluegrass pop, but they've got that kind of Appalachia feel. And then you've got the stuff that has the pop influences as well, that's on kind of mainstream radio and country radio. So it's definitely, there's definitely some room for other things there. And then you've got artists like Brett Eldridge, who, you know, when he's not touring with his band, does jazz shows and stuff in Nashville. So, you know, there's a lot of different musical influences coming into Nashville these days.
Yeah. And Brett Eldridge did a Christmas album last year, the year before, and it was much more of a jazz band, almost Michael Bublé kind of sound than what you would think of as a country record.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I love that record. It's called Glow. There were definitely a few influences off of that we kind of took into my Christmas album, but he loves doing that. I think I saw him live one time and he did Fly Me to the Moon in the show. Like, he's just got that jazz influence there. So, and that album is very much, you know, that big band, they've got the string arrangements, they've got all that stuff going. So it's really cool to kind of hear that and see that. I'm all for adding, you know, as much of that into the music as possible.
What led you to do a Christmas album after all the other stuff that you were doing?
So the past few years, probably 4 or 5 years, I've done these private little Christmas shows back home in Arkansas, just at kind of country clubs, you know, fun things to do. Me and a piano player, you know, you go play, you go do your hour and a half, you know, some extra cash before the end of the year, some Christmas money, and just kind of a, you know, a change up from what I'm usually doing with the country stuff. And it is more, you know, Michael Bublé, Frank Sinatra, and, you know, Bing Crosby style. And I always enjoyed doing that. Like I said, I had 5 or 6 years of classical voice training in high school and college. I got a music degree at Belmont University. I've learned to sing in Latin and Spanish and French and, you know, so many other languages. So it's just something to kind of change it up, keep it fresh. And every year the crowds would just get bigger and bigger and bigger, and they would love these different arrangements. And they'd always say, oh my gosh, you've got to have a Christmas album for next year. And I would always say, oh, I'm going to do it, don't worry. And then by the time I think about it, it's too late. So last year, finally, I was like, okay, I reached out to someone in December and said, let's get a meeting for January or February and start doing some thoughts and pre-production on an album. And that's what kind of got everything on schedule this year. And, you know, we started recording actually in the studio recording in July. So Christmas in July was a real thing this year.
The new album's called Christmas in the Car. Title track is an original. What's the story behind that?
I wrote it with a great songwriter here in Nashville named Bobby Tomberlin. You can look him up. He's written a couple of big number ones. Actually just wrote with Country Music Hall of Famer Whispering Bill Anderson the other day, I think. He's just great songwriter here in town. But yeah, so I grew up in Arkansas. My mom's side of the family is all in Southeast Kansas. That's actually where I was born. And so we would wake up as a kid every Christmas morning. We'd open presents as a family. We'd have breakfast. And then we would drive 7 hours to my grandmother's house in Kansas to go spend Christmas with them. We'd get there by Christmas dinner, have all the food, open presents, all that stuff. And to us, it was normal for Christmas. I know that a lot, you know, my wife's family, they're all mostly in the same town. So they'd just maybe drive across town. But for us, Christmas Day was a 7-hour drive in the car. And, you know, looking back, you know, it was just something that we did. It wasn't something that was a pain to us. It wasn't something that was annoying. We just were so excited to get there and see our grandparents and see our cousins and all that. So that's kind of the story behind the song. It's really us getting up at, you know, early in the morning to do all that and drive to see my grandparents.
You know, I would imagine that a lot of people have similar experiences, not necessarily a 7-hour drive. I know for my family, we'd get up when my kids were little, we'd get up and there was Christmas at our house. And then we were fortunate enough that my wife's mother lived on the other side of town. So we could then pack up and drive across town and have Christmas part two. And then another relative for Christmas dinner. So we're driving around San Diego all day, but it was, you know, a similar kind of thing. It was Christmas in the car.
Right.
So I bet that that connects with a lot of people. Also on the album, you combine a couple songs, and it's more than it's more like you sort of mesh them together to make one rather than making it a medley. You've got I'll Be Home for a White Christmas and A Holly Jolly Jingle Bell Rock, the first two tracks on there. What was it that led you to put those, fit those together the way that you did, instead of making it a medley, really combining them into one song?
I would still kind of call them medleys. They're kind of medley-ish arrangements. I think the main thing was I had a list of 25 songs that I wanted to do on the album, and I couldn't afford to record 25 songs. So like, how can we squeeze in a few extra here? So that was kind of one way to do it. Obviously, I'll Be Home for Christmas and White Christmas, they kind of, you know, they're close enough in styling where you can kind of mesh those together. And I wanted to also do a little bit of like a traditional Bing Crosby Christmas moved into the Drifter style. And I always wanted to record it and do all the voices and be able to do everything. So that was kind of the reason to include all of that. And then on the second one, you know, we're sitting there, we're like, man, Jingle Bell Rock and Holly Jolly, they're kind of the same feel. Like, that'd be kind of like, let's make sure, like, do we, maybe we don't do them both because they're similar, or we put them on opposite ends of the album. And I'm sitting there and we're looking at, we've charted it out, we're looking at the chords, we're like, these are really close. Like, what if we just made them the same song? And so that's kind of what we did. We obviously, you know, merged right in from Jingle Bell Rock to Holly Jolly. And at the end, you've got them both going at the same time. And for the most part, the chord progression's the same on a few little, on a few lines. You have to change up the order of the lines on Jingle Bell Rock to match it up. But it actually just ended up lining up perfectly. We're like, let's just do them in the same key and have fun with it.
You mentioned what you did for that song and, you know, the Bing Crosby and the Drifters with the other one. And there really are a lot of different styles that are on this album. It's not, and I don't want to say this like it's a bad thing, it's not a country Christmas record, though, because there's so many different flavors to it.
Right. Yeah. And I honestly, that was kind of when I met with my good friend, John Shaw, who helped me produce this. When we met, he kind of looked at me and he said, it's a Christmas album. He's like, okay, awesome. He kind of looked at me and goes, what does that sound like for you? Because he went to school with me at Belmont. He knows that I can sing everything and enjoy singing everything. And he knows, he was my roommate for a long time, so he knows I love Christmas. I was just like, man, I think it's a little bit of everything. I think we throw in some country stuff. I think we throw in some traditional pop stuff. We even throw in some of the kind of classical feel or gospel feel. And so that's the way we decided to do it. Everything, you know, nothing really has super country things like steel guitar, but the country songs have the guitar tones you want and things like that, and the BGV arrangement. So there's these country notes in there, but we've also thrown in the other stuff as well.
And I think Christmas music is probably the only genre where you can really get away with that without anybody saying anything, because you've got, you know, you've got so much different stuff here. There's something for everybody, but I think people who like Christmas music love all of that stuff. And for me, the most unexpected cover on the whole album was Merry Christmas, Darling, the Carpenters song.
Mm. Yes, that's a song that's very personal to me as well. So when we were in the car driving to my grandparents on Christmas every year, my mom had the Carpenters Christmas album, Christmas Portrait, playing nonstop every year. And it wasn't just Christmas Day. It was as soon as Thanksgiving was over, she was throwing that thing in the CD player and she was playing it. And Merry Christmas, Darling. So that's a very personal, you know, song for me for Christmas time. And when I started doing my Christmas shows, I threw that in there as a dedication to my mom, just because that whole album defines so much of my Christmas experience growing up. And not a lot of men, male singers have covered it. There's a few. I think Leslie Odom Jr. has a version, but it was just something that was so personal to me. I wanted to include it. And then in Christmas in the Car, you say, I say in the chorus, I can still hear Merry Christmas, Darling, playing in my head. So it's a reference to that song has a reference to it as well.
And it is, you know, it's such a great song. And whether you're, no matter who you are, you sing along with it when it comes on the radio.
Yes.
It's just, I know it was probably like almost a signature song for Karen Carpenter, but still.
Oh, yeah.
It's so ingrained as a part of the season. And you're right. There aren't a whole lot of male singers for whatever reason to do you even take a stab at it.
Yes.
I noticed on the Christmas album, you've done a duet on Please Come Home for Christmas. How did you decide to go that route?
I've always wanted to sing with the girl that I sang it with. Her name's Kristen Rogers. She is the very first person I ever met when I visited Belmont for our summer orientation. And we just talked about music for hours and hours and hours. And we graduated together. She's one of the, in my opinion, one of the best female vocalists in the world. She is just incredible. So I've always wanted to sing with her. She's been on tour with Eric Church recently, and she's about to go out on tour with Hozier in the spring as well. She's been on tour with them in the past. Just one of the best, you know, career BGV singers in Nashville, and just incredible. Wanted to do a duet with her. And I was like, what's one that we could, you know, really let her kind of wail on? So that was one that I thought fit to kind of a little bit country, a little bit rock from her standpoint, and just, you know, let her wail a little bit. And it turned out so great. So many people have reached out to me that's their, you know, one of their favorite songs on the album.
You know, we were talking a few minutes ago about you mixing a couple songs together. And this is a really interesting choice. Ave Maria and Mary, Did You Know? Those two, I don't know. I think about those two and I don't see the connection. How did you choose to put those together?
Well, the first time I sang Ave Maria was at a friend's wedding. It was a very, religious ceremony that they didn't allow secular music. So I had to sing something that was non-secular and I didn't have a lot to choose from. And that was one of the options they gave me. And so I learned it and sang it and I loved singing it. And like I said before, I have 5 or 6 years of classical training under my belt from my music degree. So that was one that was just fun. And obviously a lot of people include that on their Christmas albums. So that was like, oh, I started doing that at the shows. And then I love the Gaither Vocal Band, Mark Lowry version of Mary, Did You Know? And that has become the kind of crowd favorite at my Christmas shows. And so that was one I knew I had to include. And we were just sitting there talking. I was like, well, both of these songs are about the mother of Christ. Like what, like they're not exactly the same message, but it'd be kind of cool to kind of work these two together. And so, you know, we just kind of started experimenting with how can we transition from one to the other. And I think it works really, really well for so many people. Both of those songs are just deeply spiritual songs that have these huge connections to Christmas time and being at church during Christmas. So it was just a way to kind of join those two together, these two really, you know, vocally epic songs to be in one.
The two other songs that I want to ask you about are not meshed together, but they're very significant in the history of Christmas music, Silent Night and O Holy Night. Two songs that are, to many people, almost sacred. Mm-hmm. And I just wonder if when you were recording these, especially O Holy Night, if you had the feeling of how big that is, how many have come before you that have performed that, all the iconic performances, and all the people who are going to be dialed in to making sure that you get it right.
I think there was definitely some there with O Holy Night. As far as Silent Night goes, to me, that was just more of a personal touch. I know a lot of people put that on Christmas albums, but for me growing up, I spent most Christmas Eves at our Christmas Eve service at church. And at the very end of the service, we would turn out the lights in the sanctuary and everyone would light candles and sing Silent Night a cappella. So that was just something that was personal to me. And I still end my live Christmas shows with that song as well. So that one, I wasn't as much concerned about the kind of sacredness of it, more of just like the personal side of it for me. O Holy Night definitely has some of that in there for sure. When I was in the process of recording it, there were a few guys that were playing on the album and they were there in the studio. They were just like, man, this is, I got to be honest, this is one of my least favorite Christmas songs, but it's because I've recorded it or played it with people live before and they just didn't do it justice, or they, you know, didn't sing it well, or the arrangement was off, or they tried to do something that was too modern with it. So that was something that I definitely took into account. I wanted to keep it very traditional. I took very, you know, I kind of took it out of the book of David Phelps and the Gaither Vocal Band version of that one. I love his arrangement of that. David Phelps is one of the best singers in the world. And so I wanted to kind of steal a little bit of his arrangement, but also kind of keep it mine. But that song to me is just something that I've always loved it when it comes to like a choral setting, especially if you're in like singing that full choir in a church is just such a great performance of that piece. So it's something that's very nostalgic for me, but also very deeply spiritual.
Those are the two Christmas songs that still give me chills, that still give me that Christmas feeling. I mean, I listen to so many that, you know, Jingle Bell Rock doesn't quite do that for me anymore because I've heard hundreds of versions of that. But Silent Night and O Holy Night still have that magic. And with O Holy Night especially, it's a little bit like singing the national anthem in a stadium, because nobody says anything or notices anything if you do it right, but everybody remembers if you make a mistake.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's exactly how it is with the national anthem. When you're singing the national anthem, most of the time you're just going to kind of be like, okay, that was good, move on. The only way you get remembered is if you're Whitney Houston or if you somehow butcher it and it can go viral in the wrong way.
Right. Oh, Holy Night is just, it's just such a beautiful, just an amazing song. And people who love Christmas music love it, but they also want it to be what they expect it to be.
And Absolutely. You
mispronounce something or you do something unique with it or whatever, you'll get emails.
Oh yeah, for sure.
A song that's not on the album, Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You. But you did cover that 10, 11 years ago in a YouTube video. And it was kind of you channeling Michael Bublé, who I think had released a version of that year or the year before.
Yeah.
So that was really more of your sort of covering Bublé than covering Mariah. Any chance that we'll see something updated of that from you anytime soon?
Well, actually, that was one of the songs that got me doing my little private Christmas shows as well. And so, yeah, it's me covering Michael covering Mariah. So it's kind of a, you know, five ways of Kevin Bacon or, you know, all that stuff. But, 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon, whatever it is. But yeah, so that's kind of what started me to want to do these do the Christmas shows that I was doing. And I didn't want to include it because it was so, not only is that song so well known, it's the most lucrative Christmas song in history now. It passed White Christmas a couple of years ago. But that arrangement of it is so Michael now that I wanted to kind of stay away from that. But I think we are probably going to do it in my Christmas shows and keep it on there. And then, you know, the good thing about a Christmas album is, next year, a couple of years from now, I can record two or three more songs and throw them on as a deluxe version of the album. So that might be something that we record in the future too, if we can find something that makes it unique to me, that's not just a straight arrangement rip.
Yeah, that was going to be my next question, and I can't help but asking, but since Christmas music is such a thing, a big thing for me, there's never enough. So even though you just put this out, as I'm talking to you and you mentioned that you had started out with 25, 26 songs and you pared it down, I can't help but think, well, what about those other 10, 12, 13 songs that you didn't get to do? Are we going to get those?
I mean, I think it's definitely a possibility. There's already, I can already think of four or five for sure that I want to do. And I've actually, a couple weeks ago, actually wrote another original Christmas song. I think it needs a little bit of tweaking, but, you know, as I maybe write a couple more of those as well, that can lead to getting back in the studio to record those and just get, you know, maybe three or four done at a time. But you know, my wife loves Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas, and I didn't put it on the album because I feel like everybody had done it and I wanted to do something different. But that's one now that, you know, now that my wife wants it, I'm gonna have to go back and record that one as well too. So, and there's, you know, I would love to do a whole album that's all, it'd be fun to do, maybe not a whole album, but, you know, three or four more songs that are all gospel, that's just like, you know, kind of Gaither vocal band style and stuff like that too. So there's so many other things that I feel like could be fun to do. Like, I didn't get to do Run Run Rudolph either. That would be a fun one to do as well. So there's definitely songs out there that would fit right in.
You had mentioned Christmas shows. Do you have any Christmas shows coming up?
I do. I've got two public shows and then two private shows. December 15th, I'm at King Opera House in Van Buren, Arkansas. And then December 16th, I'm at The Vapors in Hot Springs, Arkansas. It's my hometown. It's a classic theater there in Hot Springs. Tickets are available on my website or on their websites. And then I've got two private shows as well that are the kind of country club type things that I've done the past couple of years. And so hopefully this is the first year I've done these Christmas shows full band. So I'll have a 5-piece band with me. So hoping that these go well and maybe we can throw in some shows in other areas next year. I know I'd love to get up to my grandmother's hometown in Kansas and do one up there, and possibly down in Dallas to do some down there as well. And obviously could easily do one here in Nashville. So this is kind of my first testing the waters of the full band Christmas performance. And then if it goes well, we'll do some more thrown on next year.
And speaking of next year, 2023 is less than a month away. Do you have stuff in the works already for the new year? Heading back out on the road, back into the studio? Any plans?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Definitely getting back out on the road, staying busy there. My full calendar will be on my website, blainehoward.com. But we had a pretty busy summer and fall. I feel like this year's really, the further we get from COVID, the more busy the calendar gets. So I'm excited to get back out on the road more this next year. And then I put out an album back in February, a country album. And that was a project that I mostly had finished before COVID started. It just been delayed because of all that stuff. So I've got a lot of songs now that I'd love to get in the studio and record as well. So planning to get in the studio and at least record 4 or 5 new country songs, as well as get a full schedule of touring going.
You mentioned your website, blainehoward.com. Is that the best way for people to keep up with you?
Yeah, that's easy, or anywhere on social media, whatever platform you use, Facebook, Instagram, you know, Twitter, I'm even on TikTok. If you want to follow me on TikTok, most of it's at Blaine Howard. TikTok is Blaine Howard Music. But if you go to my website, right there on the front page, there's a link for all those things, including YouTube and Apple Music and Spotify and all that stuff, right there on the homepage.
Terrific. Blaine, thanks so much for spending time with us today.
Ken, thank you so much for having me, man. Christmas music is something that's very personal to me, and I love singing it, love listening to it. So this has been a lot of fun.
And thank you so much for listening and for continuing to support the Sounds of Christmas station and podcast. Anytime you're ready for Christmas music, we're ready for you. Just go to soundsofchristmas.com and click on the tree or the player on the front page or on the Listen Now page. You can also grab our app in the Google Play Store and take the music with you wherever you go. And as far as this podcast goes, we're now on over 30 podcasting sites. So if you didn't find us on your favorite today, just search for the Sounds of Christmas next time you go there, and I'm pretty sure you'll see our tree. Then you can subscribe and you'll never miss another episode. If you have comments or suggestions on this episode, previous episodes, or the Sounds of Christmas station, feel free to reach out to me on social media or through the website. Thanks again. And may you always believe in Santa Claus.